You're listening to the Whole Hog Football Podcast, sponsored by Bud Anderson Home Services. Every Monday through Friday during the Razorbacks football training camp, bringing you the latest news, position analysis, and more. Here's your hosts, Matt Jones and Scotty Bordelon.
Arkansas went through its final practice before scrimmage number two on Friday morning. It was a shorter practice. Razorbacks taking things a little bit easier in preparation for that scrimmage on Saturday. Matt Jones joined by Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and Scotty Bordelon of WholeHogSports.com. Scotty and Tom, you were at the practice field earlier today. What were some of the takeaways that you saw this morning?
Yeah, things were a little bit lighter. Traylon Smith still not there, but expected back pretty soon. I don't think he would scrimmage, even if he was fully ready to go. So we're going to get a pretty big dose of Rocket Sanders as the lead running back tomorrow in the scrimmage, with a dose of A.J. Green, who is back out of the green no-contact jersey. So I hope that they can keep their running backs healthy so there's a full complement of those guys when the season hits, because honestly, just about every one of them has had some kind of ding up in this camp, and there's been one scrimmage. They had a big, heavy hitting deal yesterday, Barry Odom said, and it looks to me like they came out of it okay based on the numbers and the guys we saw out there, but they're going to hold some guys out of tomorrow's scrimmage, and KJ said they were going to try to throw downfield a little bit more, and so that was one of my key takeaways, Scotty.
Yeah, for sure. Like Tom said, it was a pretty light day. I think the time that we got to stay in there, I think it was shortened a little bit, which is fine. It was about 15 minutes. One of my takeaways from this is not really player related, but Kenny Guyton still got a quarterback arm on him. The quarterbacks were down toward the toward one end of the field, finishing up some warm-up drills with Kendall Bryles, and the receivers were on the far end. And while the receivers were waiting on the quarterbacks to get done, Kenny Guyton was slinging it around. He still got a pretty good arm on him, I think. As far as like the fastball starts and stuff, I think Harper Cole had a pretty good play. I think he took a pitch. I think it was from Lucas Coley with the threes, and he made a really nice cut upfield that would have turned into maybe a 10 or 15 yard gain, maybe even more than that. And who was the other? Tom, I can't remember what the other play that I saw. Oh, John David White had a catch against Hudson Clark. I think that was the only other real play that stood out. The third team defense for the second straight day in those fastball starts went with a four down front again. And that four was Jashad Stewart, Eric Gregory, Torian Carter, and Mateo Soli. So I'm kind of curious, with that third group, if there's, a little bit of competition for, some added playing time, maybe between Jashad Stewart and a guy like Mateo Soli, who we really haven't just heard a whole lot of in this camp.
Yeah, I would say that the offense had a better day during the fastball starts than they did on Wednesday when they had a bad day. They didn't move the ball much at all. But, Rocket Sanders had a good run today, and pretty sure
remember a couple of check down passes.
Yeah, and Malik Hornsby's been up and down, and today was an up day for Malik Hornsby.
Would you say that's been the case, Tom, with all the quarterbacks to this point in the preseason, that they've been up and down? It seems like, from what I've heard from you guys and others who have been out there, that there really hasn't been a lot of consistency from one day to the next from any of the quarterbacks.
I think that's a fair assessment. I think that the defensive front, there's so much competition for playing time. Everybody wants to impress, and they're playing more aggressively. They're getting upfield quicker. I just think that there's been a lot of penetration, and KJ and the other quarterbacks are having to make quick decisions. Now, the fact that they're having to do that in camp is hopefully going to prepare them for the games, and maybe things won't be quite as quick against Rice. But that's what quarterbacks have to do. They have to know what the call is. They have to know what all the checks and variations on the play are and make very quick decisions. And KJ is going to be under the gun. Today, Kendall Bryles put a number up for him, 65% completions he'd like to see. I don't think they're going to be able to get that high, but if they can get to 60, I think they'll have a pretty good offensive season.
If we look at the scrimmage tomorrow, what are you looking for? And I know it's close to the media and close to the public, so everything that we're going to learn about the scrimmage is going to be through the interviews with coaches and players and maybe some other things that leak out of the scrimmage, like Hunter Yurachek getting hit across the face with a cleat last week. But as you look at the scrimmage tomorrow, what do you think the coaches are wanting to get out of it? What do you expect you'll see out of it? Scotty, let's start with you.
Yeah, I think they want to get out of it healthy. I don't know that they can, you know, afford to lose guys 2 weeks out from the first game of the year. But the thing that I'm going to be listening for is were you cleaner on both sides of the ball in terms of penalties? I think that was one of the big things that Sam Pittman was just not real happy about after the first scrimmage. Too many defensive pass interference penalties. And I know those guys in the secondary get awful aggressive and handsy. And I guess that you want your DBs to be aggressive, but not, you know, kind of toe the line maybe a little bit. And then just on special teams too, like I know that they brought SEC officials out for that first scrimmage. And so that's kind of getting these guys accustomed to what they're going to see in a game. But penalties are a big deal just on both sides of the ball. You can't set yourself back as an offense with false starts. And as a defense, you know, jumping off sides, you can't give away 5 free yards. And on special teams too, like I remember last year, it seems like Arkansas had an illegal procedure penalty just about every time they punted. Like it was kind of rare if Arkansas's punt team hit the field and there wasn't a penalty flag thrown. So that kind of stuff's got to get cleaned up. Like if special teams is going to be better, you know, you can't afford to, you know, give up 5 yards here and there. That's got to be a lot cleaner.
Absolutely. Yeah. Special teams has got to make a major move this season. And that starts with, you know, tomorrow having a better scrimmage than they did. I understand there was some organizational stuff going on in the first one that delayed some of the snaps on special teams work. So that's got to be better. KJ said they were going to try the deep ball tomorrow. I mean, he pointed that out specifically. So do they have any success? Are they throwing to Ketron Jackson with the ones? You know, I would think that Treylon Burks, Trey Knox, maybe De'Veon Warren get minimal, if any, playing time tomorrow. Same with Treylon Smith, same with Grant Morgan. And you can probably name several guys on defense. So do they have any kind of running game at all? Rocket Sanders is probably going to get a few looks. I would not give him very many carries. I mean, if he's going to be your number two back, I hate to sound, you know, like overly concerned, but the fewer hits your running backs take, the better. And communication on the offensive front in terms of picking up blitzes and getting pass protection right. I think that was an issue in scrimmage one.
As I mentioned yesterday, it's rare that we get to hear from coordinators now since Sam Pittman became the head coach. He's changed the media policies in terms of who is available. You hear from players still quite a bit, but as far as assistant coaches and coordinators, the availability has shrunk up a lot compared to, you know, previous coaches at Arkansas. And so when you get to hear the coordinators, I said this yesterday, I think it's a treat. You get to learn a lot about their units. And Barry Odom being a safeties coach and Kendall Briles being a quarterback's coach, you also get to hear about those players in the individual position rooms that they coach. And so Kendall Briles spoke with media this morning, and here were some highlights from what he had to say.
Yeah, offensively, I feel like we're right where we need to be at camp. Obviously, there's always room to improve. Had a good practice, just got practice filled right now. The main thing that you want is guys learning and then retaining. And I feel like we're doing that offensively at all positions and then staying healthy. That's what camp's all about. And, you know, these guys already know us. We've been here, so they know what to expect. We got a couple new coaches, but I feel like we're right where we need to be.
Coach, how's the backup quarterback job going? It looks like Malik's been pretty steady there, but really it looks like maybe there's a little more competition for that third spot.
Yeah, you're right there. You know, KJ's one, Malik is two right now. He's had all the two reps, and, you know, he hadn't let that go. Malik's a special athlete, and, you know, he puts pressure on KJ, and that's what we want. You know, the third spot, we've got, you know, three guys that are really handling that with Jones, Renfro, and Coley. All those guys are getting reps, and they're all different. You know, there's different abilities. That, you know, the tough thing with fall camp is, you know, unlike the spring, in the spring you can throw a bunch of guys out there with a bunch of reps. You know, right now we're getting ready to beat Rice. So they're limited and you know, the opportunities that they have on the field. So they got to make the most of them, which is a lot of times it's hard, you know, to be able to get in rhythm and be on the field and really get lathered up. So it's difficult. We understand that, but all three of those guys are still competing.
pretty rare thing to have as many starters back as you do, but then replace your quarterback. How does that help you going into the season, having so much experience back, particularly the line?
Yeah, and now that's what I was going to say. You know, up front, having that experience back, it's just huge. You know, we had an O-line change with Coach Kennedy, and he was here in the spring and knows, you know, obviously our expectations and how he's going to coach those guys. So he's done a tremendous job with them, and I think they've really, you know, liked the change with Coach Kennedy. You know, I feel like that room's in a great spot right now. But we do. We've got a lot of returning guys. You know, obviously when you lose a guy like Felipe and, you know, you're going to feel that. And, you know, it was great that we had a spring without him and get those quarterbacks out there. And those guys are all chomping at the bit and they're all ready to contribute. But I feel like we got a host of guys that are very capable. And we just got to continue to work this fall camp.
Tom, as you listened to Kendall Briles this morning, what stood out to you?
Let's see. That KJ is on course. That KJ KJ knows that Kendall would like to see him around 235. He's now under 245, but still looking pretty agile, still has a good first step. And as Kendall said, KJ could weigh 285 as long as he's dropping dimes on people and getting away in the pass rush. So we didn't get into specifics about – well, he said that the protection issues they faced in the first scrimmage were more younger guys. So I'm hoping that means that the veteran guys did what they were supposed to do in pass pro, because we've just seen defensive linemen getting loose and getting early pressure on KJ so often in our limited viewings. Let's see, that Keetron Jackson's having a superb camp. Rocket Sanders is too. And that Traylon would be at the scrimmage and maybe wouldn't be doing much, but hopefully we see him back next week.
Scotty, I know you're riding on Keetron Jackson today. I thought it was interesting that Kendall said that he was, quote, by far the most improved player on the offense.
Yeah, he's a guy that I think can contribute right away. And I think if you're looking at freshmen on the offensive side of the ball, maybe aside from Rocket Sanders, he's a guy that maybe has as high of expectations on him as any. And he's good. He's got a good frame. I think he's added quite a bit of weight. I know I was looking at Arkansas's recruiting rankings. He was the highest rated guy in Arkansas's last class. And I think then coming out of high school, he was like 6'2", 186, and now he's 6'2", 205. So he's got a pretty good frame on him, kind of rangy guy. And KJ Jefferson said that he likes the explosiveness that Keetron's been playing with in this camp. And he's a guy that, you know, maybe can help fill a little bit of the void that Mike Woods left in terms of being able to, you know, quick 1-2, get by your man defender and take the top off of a defense. And one of the things I think it was really big that he went through the spring and, you know, he was able, I think that really benefited him because he was one able to get kind of a head start on maybe some of these other guys at receiver in terms of learning the offense, the concepts, the ins and outs of that, and then growing more comfortable with that knee because he was, you know, wearing a knee brace all throughout the spring and now he's got it off. And I think he's moving more fluid and I think he's a lot more confident. And I think he's right in the heart of Arkansas's receivers rotation. That's a guy that I'm really excited about.
We talked a week or so ago about the running backs coming in from Oklahoma and the competition that they faced in high school. Same thing with Keetron Jackson coming in from not the largest classification in Texas, but one of the larger classifications in Texas. And obviously he saw a lot of really good competition there. Tom, one more thing from Kendall Briles that I wanted to touch on, and that's that he was asked about Landon Rogers and his move to tight end from quarterback. He said that if he puts on another 10 to 15 pounds, he would be at an ideal weight for a tight end. Do you see this being a permanent move for Landon Rogers, or do you just see this being kind of a stopgap measure while they're low on tight ends this year?
Yeah, really hard to stay on that. But if he does put on 15 pounds, I guess that would assist him as being a larger quarterback. But, I mean, KJ Jefferson's a redshirt sophomore. It depends on how quickly Landon Rogers – in his mind wants to get on the field. And if he develops very quickly as a tight end, that could be a quick way to the field. That could be a get on the field this year kind of situation for Landon. So it depends on where he feels like he'll slot in, because Lucas Coley's in the same class as him. So tough decision. But you just want the best for the kid. There were some thought during the recruiting process and over the offseason that Landon would eventually wind up as a tight end. So maybe an early move there would be beneficial to him.
The Whole Hog Football Podcast is brought to you by Bud Anderson Home Services. Every day this week and last, we have gone through the different positions on the Razorbacks football team. Today's the end. Today's the final position we haven't talked about, and that's safeties. Tom, this is a position where it's like a lot of other positions, it feels like, on the football team. There's a lot of experience in the back end. Now it's all about, you know, putting it together and becoming a really strong group, but the SEC experience is there.
It absolutely is. This is a group that has a chance to be really good. Jalen Catalon, people are grouping him in a category of one of the smartest, one of the quickest to diagnose plays. And Kendall Briles today said about him that he's a guy who, when he targets you, he just doesn't miss. He comes in and he gets you. And you think about some of the little check down passes Mississippi State threw last year. And if the guy can get 4 or 5 yards, they move the chains, and Kendall and Catalon diagnosed it and went in and took guys out at their feet. He's going to be good. Joe Fouché had a shoulder that kept him from lifting weights last year. So he should be stronger and a better hitter. And I think that gives guys like Simeon Blair and Malik Chavis, Jaden Johnson, and Miles Slusher, who apparently is going to be a safety slash nickel and could even play corner, just more room to grow. And I think there's going to be some depth there, and it could be a position of strength, Scotty.
Yeah, for sure. I think at safety, you probably feel comfortable going 6 or 7 deep. Like if you throw Miles Slusher in that group, like you feel good about Simeon Blair and Trent Gordon. Jaden Johnson's a young guy, but Joe Fouché and Simeon were both talking on Thursday about how they kind of compare him to Cam Chancellor, who played, you know, he was part of the Legion of Boom with the Seattle Seahawks. So you got to like what you're hearing about him. And then Jalen Catalon and Malik Chavis. Malik Chavis hasn't, you know, maybe gotten the pub that, you know, he would like, but that's another rangy guy that can really run. And I think I've seen some videos that the Arkansas's Twitter account has posted, and he's come away with some picks. We heard from at least one person, maybe Jalen Catalon, that during the scrimmage last weekend that Chavis came down with a pick. So that's a pretty good group. And I'm pretty excited about Joe Fouché, because Barry Odom said that he's making as many plays this preseason as anybody on the field. And, you know, if in year two under a defensive coordinator or in a specific scheme, it's not really that uncommon to see guys make a leap. And if Joe Fouché makes a leap, a guy who's already proven that he can be productive, like the last 2 years, I think he's north of 140 tackles and 3 picks. If he makes another leap, you're talking about Arkansas possibly having, you know, one of the top potentially 1-2 punches at safety that the SEC has.
Yeah. And I think back to spring, you guys, and there'd be times when the backups would be on the field, and Malik Chavis and Jaden Johnson are bigger than so many safeties that they've had over the years. And you're like, dang. And Chavis made some plays in the spring as well. So if those guys come along, if they can play fast, you're right. It could be 6 or 7 deep. And I know that they're going to play more 4-man fronts, but there's some good players back there. And I think there's so many guys willing to, you know, sacrifice their body to get up and make tackles, much like Jalen. But I'll say this, I'll caution on Jalen Catalon. He had 2 targeting calls last year. One of them I strenuously disagreed with in the LSU game. However, that gives you a reputation, and SEC officials know this. And in the scrimmage the other day, the tackle in which Josh Oglesby hit Hunter Yurachek's nose, he was heading out of bounds. And Kalen and Jalen may have known that, but he hit him. And I would say take it easier on your teammates. I know you go 100 miles an hour all the time. I would caution Jalen Catalon. There's a time to dial it back, and that was a time. And in games, he's just got to be very wise about the positioning of where his helmet is and making sure he leads with his shoulder and trying to not crush the defenseless, quote, player. And I go back, LSU, that was a bad call.
when Catalan spoke with us a week or 2 weeks ago, I think he was asked about the targeting calls and, you know, the way he plays. And I think essentially he said something to the extent of, I'm going to continue to play the way that I play and just hope that the, you know, the fundamentals that have been instilled with me, you know, are good enough and let the chips fall where they may. But Tom, going back to Catalan for a second, Odom said something yesterday to the extent of he thought that Jalen Catalan hadn't really gotten to where he nearly as good as he thought he could be, you know, that there's still a lot of potential there for him. And I think that's interesting when you think about the fact he was a first team all SEC safety a year ago. And you're starting to hear comparisons of him with the types of Atwater and Kenny Hamlin and Kanoy Kennedy, some of the, you know, the really great players to play his position who have come through the program.
Absolutely. I'll answer quick and toss it to Scotty, but I did a feature on Jalen. I can't remember late last season. And it's his film study. It's his leadership. It's his commitment to being a great player and bringing guys along with him. And so I think a lot of the other safeties, he's convinced them, go in, study the film. The more you do that, you know, the more you know the tendencies. And that's one of the reasons why he's so effective, is he can sense what's coming based on film study, and why when he zeroes in, he usually hits his target.
Yeah, and I hope Jalen doesn't become kind of a marked man for officials, you know, kind of in the same way, you know, if you watch the NBA, you certainly know guys on rosters, like when officials get assigned to a game, they know the guys on the rosters who might give them an attitude problem. So they might have a little bit of a shorter leash. And I just hope Jalen's not entering, you know, that same kind of space in terms of, you know, his physicality and the you know, the potential targeting issues that they could run into there. But, you know, I think Barry Odom thinks that obviously he could be a lot better. And that's pretty wild, because, you know, Jalen had, I think, one of the best seasons that we've seen from a safety in a long, long time. And I just hope that he learns, you know, kind of when to turn it on and when to turn it off and be much smarter, because he is an invaluable piece in that back end. Not that you don't trust guys behind him, but we saw at times last year, you know, when he came out of games there, I mean, there's a bit of a drop off there, and that's a credit to how good Jalen is. You know, he says he's going to play with no regrets. I hope he makes wise decisions, and he, you know, ultimately doesn't end up regretting, you know, the hits that he ends up making.
We mentioned that, you know, he's being talked about in the, you know, kind of the same conversation with some of those greats. The big difference is that, you know, Atwater and Kennedy and Hamlin, they didn't play in the era of targeting. And this is a rule that I really would like to see some modification to. I feel like it is so difficult to make a decision on targeting there in the, you know, the limited time frame that these officials have, you know, to really make that call and keep the game going and, you know, try not to, you know, have these football games last any longer than they already do. I almost would like to see something, and I'd like to get your thoughts from both of you about this. I almost think that this is something that could be handled kind of like basketball does, you know, with their flagrant one, flagrant two. You know, okay, you get a flagrant one, but you get another one and you're tossed out of the game. But then I'd also maybe like to see from the SEC office, maybe a review of these types of targeting calls where, hey, a player had a call. He got to play for the rest of the second half, but upon further review, this was egregious, and he's not going to get to play this next week. Something a little bit maybe more in line with like what the NFL does.
Yeah, that is a good point, and I will say that, you know, going back to the NBA again, you know, if there is, like, I think the NBA goes back and they review, maybe it's called the last 2 minute report, and they can rescind or add, I believe, technical fouls or flagrant fouls or something of the like. And I don't see why, you know, the SEC in the least couldn't adopt something like that, because I think if they would have gone back and done further review on that hit that Catalan made against LSU last year, you know, I think they probably would have rescinded it and he would have gotten to play in the game at the beginning of the game the next week. So I just think that could, you know, I think that could obviously be really beneficial. I'm sure Tom's got some good thoughts on this.
Well, I think, well, this is obviously an off year for implementing rules only for player safety for this year. But yeah, the SEC, there'd have to be some impetus behind it from coaches who like who, if Sam Pittman sent in the LSU and say, what could my guy do any differently than what he did on this play? Because I think the receiver, and I can't remember, it wasn't Racy McMath. It was one of the others, but he caught the ball and he saw Catalan. And I think he ducked his head some. Catalan clearly did not lead with his helmet. I think he turned his body, turned his torso to where he kind of hit him with lower shoulder. And it was almost like, I'm doing everything I can to not crush this guy. And it wasn't a crushing shot. And I was really surprised when he was ejected for that. You know, they held it together for the first half of the Missouri game pretty well without Jalen Catalan. But the other one, I think the A&M game might have been a little bit more clear cut. But you're right. He's got to be very careful about getting that, quote, reputation. And it's avoiding one in the first half of the season, I think, would be really, really wise for Jalen.
I think maybe they should implement maybe like a yellow card and a red card. I don't know if that's too subjective or not. Even like with basketball too, like with a flagrant one and a flagrant two, like I think if you use the flagrant foul system, I think that hit against LSU is a yellow and he stays in the game, and that game could obviously turn out a lot different.
I'd like to see a back judge walk up to Jalen Catalan with a red card out of his pocket. that would be pretty entertaining. I want to go back to one more thing that Barry said, Tom, yesterday, and I thought it was interesting about Miles Slusher and his versatility and the ability to go from safety to cornerback. And Barry said that there aren't a lot of players who can make that kind of move.
Yeah, just a smart, instinctive guy. I think he's right up under Jalen Catalan's wing, which means he's going to get in the film study. He cares about him, you know, improving his craft. He got some PT last year, and I think he's going to be – I don't know if he's going to be the first DB in, but he very well could be. And he could get some nickel action as well. What they're doing, they're cross-training all these guys, and so if Greg Brooks goes out with a hamstring or something, they can trust that Slusher, Trent Gordon, can go in there and the play does not drop off. We did see Bryce Stevens get by Slusher on a run down the middle or on a pass route down the middle the other day, and Malik Hornsby dropped a dime on him for the touchdown. So he's still got great, great skills, and he wants to be a great player, Miles Slusher.
Tom, one more before we get out of here. The AP poll came out this week, and you're an AP voter. Arkansas is going to play five teams that are ranked in the AP top 25. That's number one, Alabama, number five, Georgia, number six, Texas A&M. LSU is ranked 16th and Texas is ranked 21st. What's your philosophy when you vote on teams in the preseason, and how close did the final top 25 look to the ballot that you submitted?
Well, I did not compare them. Pretty busy that day it came out. And I go with the fact that I know Alabama is going to have depth. They're going to have their O-line and D-line are going to be stout. I believe Bryce Young will be able to come in and conduct that offense. And I know Clemson is going to be tough and Ohio State. So the top four or five are the usual suspects. When you get down to the last few, teams like Coastal Carolina that had a really good season, I can't tell you everybody they have coming back, but I do understand it's a lot. So they were in my bottom part. Teams like Oklahoma State, Arizona State, you look at the other magazines and read through them, and to me it's a crapshoot. It turns out that I was the only person who voted BYU in the top 25, the only one at all. And so I did a hit with BYU TV earlier this week because they were so happy that somebody voted for BYU. They had a great season last year. They lost Zach Wilson, the quarterback, and a lot of other guys, and they have a challenging schedule. I think they got Arizona, Utah, and Arizona State early on. So we'll find out whether BYU deserves to be in the top 25. But I like a few weeks in, and things starting to sort themselves out a lot better.
Go to wholehogsports.com. This weekend we'll have a recap of the Razorback scrimmage. We'll also have several more feature stories. Position analysis are still coming out. For Tom Murphy and Scotty Bordelon, I'm Matt Jones. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll be back with another podcast on Monday.
The preceding has been a production of wholehogsports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at wholehogsports.com for the latest news and commentary.